We got an announcement to make here. We got something crazy going down. Check it out. We got free shots of vodka. That's coming through. Courtesy of Skid Row Radio.
Skid Row
Studios. That's right.
Skid Row Studios.
Skid Row Studios in the house. We're recording live tonight.
And we are broadcasting as well from King Eddie's.
Come get your shot of vodka.
Yeah. That's too easy.
Press 1 at any time to take this call, or press 3 to decline. This customer is calling your listing in. Women Fetish, Fem Doms. To your member name.
Ava.
To accept this call, press 1. To decline, press 3. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, guys. How you doing? You are freaking fantastic. Okay, I'm sitting on the couch. I just grabbed the glass I was drinking out of, and I got my little dick inside it, and I'm waiting for it to come. Since I took so much coke, I don't know if it's going to come right away, but I'm just going to leave it there. Fuck, you're so hot. I really want to serve you so bad. I just want to be yours as long as you'll let me. Some tired typing. Fucking hottest woman I've ever fucking met in my life. Oh, no, I'm not hard right now. I'm not hard. I'm just holding my dick in the cup and I'm peeing. I'm gonna start peeing. Hold on. I'm gonna stand over here so I can read what you're writing. Okay. You were thinking of Amy. No, I wasn't. I was not. I was hoping she would get lost. And all I was thinking was I plan on talking to you as long as you let me, and I hope that she doesn't get, hope she gets busy so she doesn't have to fucking realize I'm doing something bad, you know? Because I don't want to talk to you as long as you let me. I adore you. I want to worship you so fucking bad. I've never, just so you know, I know I talk too much. I'll take a break after the sentence. I've never served anybody like this before. I've been kinky, but not like this. I read everything you write aloud. Well, it didn't start from the top. I guess some of it went away. No caps, idiot. No caps, idiot. Only the G and the A. And for, oh, no, you did do it like this. Oh, okay. Goddess Ava says, no caps, idiot. No caps, idiot. Goddess Ava says, every time you write, it goes back to the bottom. Goddess Ava says, only the G and the A. Goddess Ava says, N for YFM. Goddess Ava says, MOA. Goddess Ava says, you pissed me off by logging off. Goddess Ava says, $1,000 fine. Goddess Ava says, no. Goddess Ava says, why did you fuck up? Goddess Ava says, clear your debt to Avanity. Goddess Ava says, 1500, dummy. Goddess Ava says, go now. Goddess Ava says, you have 40 seconds. Goddess Ava says, copy the confirmation on the web page. Oh, you bastard. Where is it? Fuck. Oh, too weak. Goddess Ava says, no caps, idiot. Goddess Ava says, only the G and A. Goddess Ava says, oh, and for YFM. Goddess Ava says, MOA. And Goddess Ava says, no. Goddess Ava says, why did you fuck up? Oh, fuck. Goddess Ava says,
No cat in the yard. Gotta stay for sure. That's not him at all. Gotta stay. Fuck, I can't do it. God. A man hit a woman, long on the town. No goddess Ava says, no caps, idiot. Goddess Ava says, only the GNA. Goddess Ava says, oh God, that sounds awful. Goddess Ava says, no, you're so mean. Yes, guys. Fuck, I really want to serve you. Oh, don't pay now, okay? Whatever you say. Wow, what do I say? I say this. Fuck. Oh, please don't be bored. Please. I'll do anything you say. If you weren't keeping me so busy, I would have pissed in the glass already. Oh, come on. No, it's my fault. I'm the idiot. Not you. I can't move fast enough. It's my own fault. I'm not as smart as you, you know? Which one? Loser Brian's debt to Goddess? Loser Brian's debt to Goddess Ava is $500. Two, loser Brian's debt to God. No, that's not it. Okay. Idiot. That's me. Oh, fuck, what do I have? What do you want me to write? What do you want me to say? Please. I want to entertain you so bad, please. I love you. You're so hot. Idiot. Oh, Brian, idiot. Okay, one. Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. Two, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. Three, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. Four, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. Five, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. Five, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. Six, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. Seven, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. Eight, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. Nine, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. 10, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. 11, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. 12, Brian's the idiot. I'm fucking peeing right now. 13, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. 14, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. 15, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. 16, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. 17, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. 18, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. 19, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. Oh. Yes, okay. Fuck, where am I? Can't remember. 15, Brian's the idiot. I wish. 1, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 2, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 3, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 4, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 5, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 6, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 7, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 8, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 9, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 10, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. Because I forgot where I was. 11, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 12, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 13, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 14, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 15, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 16, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 17, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 18, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 19, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 20, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 21, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 22, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 23, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 24, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 25, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 26, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 27, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 28, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 29, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 30, Brian's idiot, not Goddess Ava. 31, Brian's idiot, not gonna save it. 32, Brian's idiot, not gonna save it. 33, Brian's idiot, not gonna save it. 34, Brian's idiot, not gonna save it. 35, Brian's idiot, not gonna save it. 36, Brian's idiot, not gonna save it. 35, Brian's idiot, not gonna save it. 36, Brian's idiot, not gonna save it. 37, Brian's idiot, not gonna save it. 38, Brian's idiot, not gonna save it. 39, Brian's the idiot, not gonna save it. 40, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. 41, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. 42, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. 43, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. 44, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. She does. 45, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. 46, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. 47, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. 48, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. 49, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. 50, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. Holy shit, that's halfway through. 51, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. 52, Brian's the idiot, not Goddess Ava. 53, Brian, I'm an idiot, not Goddess Ava. 54, Brian, I'm an idiot, I'm not Goddess Ava. 50, 45, Brian, I'm an idiot, I'm not God a saver. 46, Brian, I'm an idiot, I'm not God a saver. Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. 45, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. 46, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. 47, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. 47, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. 48, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. 48, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. 49, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. I went back to 40 somehow. 50, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. 51, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. 52, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. 53, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. 54, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. Don't you know I wish I was her? Oh, 50, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. Don't you know I wish I was her? 51, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. Don't you know I wish I was her? 52, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. Don't you know I wish I was her? 53, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. Don't you know I wish I was her? 54, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. Don't you know I wish I was her? 55, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. Don't you know I wish I was her? 56, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. Don't you wish I was her? 56, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. Don't you know I wish I was her? 57, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. Don't you know I wish I was her? 57, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. Don't you know I wish I was her? 57, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. Don't you know I wish I was her? 58, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. Don't you know I wish it was her? 59, Brian, you're an idiot. Don't you know I wish it was her? Shit, Brian, 59, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. Don't you know I wish I was her? 60, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. Don't you know I wish it was her? That's why I let you touch me, because I'm an ugly slut. 61, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. Don't you know I wish I was her? That's why I let you touch me, because I'm an ugly slut. 62, Brian, you're an idiot, not God a saver. Don't you know I wish I was her? That's why I let you touch me, because I'm an ugly slut.
ईशान प्राणद प्राणो ज्येष्ठ श्रेष्ठ प्रजापति हिरण्यगर्भो भूगर्भो माधवो मधुसूदन ईश्वरो विक्रमी धन्वी मेधावी विक्रमक्रम अनुत्तमो दुराधर्ष कृतज्ञ कृतिरात्मवान् सुरेश शरण शर्म विश्वरेता प्रजाभव अध संवत्सरो व्याल प्रत्यय सर्वदर्शन अजः सर्वेश्वर सिद्ध सिद्धि सर्वादिरच्युतः वृषाकपिरमेयात्मा सर्वयोग विनिसृतः वसुर्वसुमनः सत्यः समात्मा सम्मितः समः अमोघ पुण्डरीकाक्षो वृषकर्मा वृषाकृतिः रुद्रो बहुशिरा बभ्रुर्विश्वयोनिश्रुतिश्रवाः अमृतशाश्वतस्थाणुर्वरारोहो महतपाः सर्वदः सर्वविद्भानुर्विश्वक्सेनो जनार्दनः वेदो वेदविदव्यङ्गो वेदाङ्गो वेदवित्कविः लोकाध्यक्षः सुराध्यक्षो धर्माध्यक्षकृताकृतः चतुरात्मा चतुर्व्यूहश्चतुर्दंष्टश्चतुर्भुजः भ्राजिष्णुर्भोजनं भोक्ता सहिष्णुर्जगदादिजः अनघो विजयो जेता विश्वयोनिः पुनर्वसुः उपेन्द्रो वामनः शुचिरूर्जितः अतीन्द्रः सङ्ग्रहः सर्गो धृतात्मा नियमो यमः वेद्यो वैद्यः सदा योगी वीरः माधवो मधुः अतीन्द्रियो महामायो महोत्सवो महाबलः महाबुद्धिः महावीर्यो महाशक्तिः
precinct cell. It was a clear, bright day, but there was no warmth in the sun. Danny shivered with an inner cold. He turned up the collar of his worn, greasy black overcoat. This beat Danny wouldn't pawn for a deuce, he thought. He was in the West 90s. A long block of brownstone rooming houses. Here and there, a holly wreath in a clean black window. Danny's senses registered everything sharp and clear with the painful intensity of junk sickness. The light hurt his dilated eyes. He walked past a car, darting his pale blue eyes sideways in quick appraisal. There was a package on the seat, and one of the ventilator windows was unlocked. Danny walked on 10 feet, no one in sight. He snapped his fingers and went through a pantomime of remembering something and wheeled around. No one. Bad setup, he decided. The street get empty like this, I stand out conspicuous. Gotta make it fast. He reached for the ventilator window. A door opened behind him. Danny whipped out a rag and began polishing the car windows. He could feel the man standing behind him. What are you doing? Danny turned as if surprised. Oh, just thought your car windows needed polishing, mister. The man had a frog face and a deep South accent. He was wearing a camel's hair overcoat. My car don't need polishing, nothing stole out of it, neither. Danny slid sideways as the man grabbed for him. I wasn't looking to steal nothing, mister. I'm from the South, too, Florida. Goddamn sneaking thief. Danny walked away fast and turned a corner. Better get out of the neighborhood. That hick is likely to call the law. He walked 15 blocks, sweat running down his body. There was a raw ache in his lungs. His lips drew back off his yellow teeth in a snarl of desperation. I gotta score somehow. If I had some decent clothes. Danny saw a suitcase standing in a doorway. Good leather. He stopped and pretended to look for a cigarette. Funny, he thought. No one around. Inside, maybe. Phoning for a cab.
Along the way, we'll bring to you
the corner was only a few houses
new dimension,
away.
New value.
Danny took a deep breath.
Ready? I throw this switch. Pump up the volume, pump up the volume. Pump that bass.
Please, would you mind saying that again?
Interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin from our on-the-spot passport.
Oh, my gosh. The music just turns me on.
Thinking of a master plan. Step with the record. Step with the record. Thinking of a master plan. Step with the record. Step with the record. Thinking of a master plan. This ain't nothing but sweat inside my hands. So I dig into my pocket, all my money spent. So I get deep up, still coming up with lint. So I start my mission, leave my residence. Thinking how could I get some dead presidents? I need money. I used to be a stick-up kid. So I think of all the devious things I did. I used to roll up, roll up, roll up. I used to roll up, roll up. I used to roll up. This is a hole up. Ain't nothing funny, stop smiling.
smiling. You still don't nothing move but the money. But now I learn to earn cause I'm righteous. I feel great, so maybe I might just search for a 9 to 5. If I thrive, then maybe I stay alive. So I walk up the street whistling this, feeling out of place cause man do I miss a pen and a paper, a stereo, a tape for me and Eric being a nice big plate of fish, which is my favorite dish. But without no money, it's still a wish. Cause I don't like to dream about getting paid, so I dig into the books of the rhymes that I made. So now it's a test to see if I got pulled. Hit the studio, cause I'm paid in full.
Somewhere around Barstow on the edge of the desert,
it's like
when the drugs began to take hold, I remember saying something like,
I feel a bit lightheaded. Maybe you should drive.
And suddenly, there was a terrible roar all around us, and the sky was full of what looked like
huge bats,
all swooping and screeching and diving around the car,
which was going about 100 miles an hour,
with the top down to Las Vegas.
Holy Jesus, what are these goddamn animals?
My attorney had taken off his shirt and was pouring beer on his chest to facilitate the tanning process.
What the hell are you yelling about? Never mind, it's your turn to drive. No point in mentioning those bats. The poor bastard will see them soon enough.
Very soon we would both be completely twisted. But there was no going back. We would have to ride it out. Press registration for the fabulous Mint 400 was already underway, and we had to get there by 4 to claim our soundproof suite.
I guess...
the Beverly Hills Hotel, in the patio section, of course, and we were just sitting there under the palm tree when this uniformed dwarf came to me with a pink telephone and said,
this must be the call you've been waiting for all this time, sir.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. That was headquarters. They want me to go to Las Vegas at once and make contact with a Portuguese photographer named Lacerda. He'll have the details.
God, hell, I think I see the pattern. This one sounds like real trouble. You're going to need plenty of legal advice before this thing is over. And my first advice is that you should rent a very fast car with no top and get the hell out of L.A. for at least 48 hours. This blows my weekend because naturally I'll have to go with you and we'll have to arm ourselves.
Why not? Wait. A thing like this is worth doing it all. It's worth doing right. We need some decent equipment and plenty of cash on the line. Only for a permanent record.
What kind of story is this?
The Mint 400. It's the richest off-the-road race for motorcycles and dune buggies in the history of organized sport.
The sporting editors gave me $300 in cash, most of which was spent on extremely dangerous drugs. The trunk of the car looked like a mobile narcotics lab. We had 2 bags of grass, 75 pellets of mescaline, 5 sheets of high-powered blotter acid, a salt shaker half full of cocaine, and a whole galaxy of uppers, downers, screamers, laughers. A
quart of rum.
A case of Budweiser. A
pint of raw ether.
And 2 dozen Amels.
Not that we needed all that for the trip, but once you get locked into a serious drug collection, the tendency is to push it as far as you can. The only thing that worried me was the ether. There is nothing in the world more helpless and irresponsible and depraved than a man in the depths of an ether being.
Yes! It's time for a long snort of ether!
And then do the next 100 miles in a horrible, slobbering sort of spastic stupor. The only way to keep alert on ether is to do up a lot of angles. All at once, but steadily.
Just enough to maintain focus at 90 through Barstow. Man, this is the way to travel. Turn up the volume. One tells you poor fool. Wait till you see those goddamn bats.
Sympathy for the Devil was the only tape we had. So we played it over and over as a kind of demented counterpoint to the radio.
Hey, is it hitchhiking? Let's give this boy a lift.
Are you crazy with all the drugs we got in this car? A kid might be a narc.
Before I could mount any argument, he stopped. And this poor hokey kid was running up to the car with a big grin on his face.
Hot damn! I never rode in a convertible before.
Is that right? Well, I guess you're about ready, huh?
We're your friends. We're not like the others.
Oh, Christ, he's gone around the bend. No more of that talk, or I'll put the leeches on you.
By tearing butterflies in half. And some men do it in Palm Springs, laying it into butter blondes with Cadillac soles. Cadillacs and butterflies, nothing and everything. The face melting down to the last puff in a cellar in Corpus Christi. There's something for the touts, the nuns, the grocery clerks, and you. Something at 8 a.m. Something in the library. Something in the river. Everything and nothing. In the slaughterhouse, it comes running along the ceiling on a hook. And you swing it. One, two, three. And then you've got it. $200 worth of dead meat. Its bones against your bones. Something and nothing. It's always early enough to die, and it's always too late. And the drill of blood in the basin wide, it tells you nothing at all. And the grave diggers playing poker over 5 a.m. coffee, waiting for the grass to dismiss the frost. They tell you nothing at all. We have everything and we have nothing. Days with glass edges and the impossible stink of river moss, worse than shit. Checkerboard days of moves and counter moves. Fagged interest, with as much sense in defeat as in victory. Slow days like mules humping it slagged and sullen and sun-glazed up a road. Where a madman sits waiting among blue jays and wrens netted in and sucked a flaky gray. Good days, too, of wine and shouting, fights in alleys, fat legs of women striven around your bowels, buried in moans, the signs in bull rings like diamonds hollering Mother Capri, violets coming out of the ground, telling you to forget the dead armies and the loves that robbed you. Days when children say funny and brilliant things like savages trying to send you a message through their bodies, while their bodies are still alive enough to transmit and feel and run up and down without locks and paychecks and ideals and possessions and beetle-like opinions. Days when you can cry all day long in a green room with a door locked. Days when you can laugh at the bread man because his legs are too long. Days of looking at hedges. And nothing. The days of the bosses, yellow men with bad breath and big feet. Men who look like frogs, hyenas. Men who walk as if melody had never been invented. Men who think it is intelligent to hire and fire and profit. Men with expensive wives they possess like 60 acres of ground, to be drilled or shown off or to be walled away from the incompetent. Men who'd kill you because they're crazy and justify it because it's the law. Men who stand in front of windows 30 feet wide and see nothing. Men with luxury yachts who can sail around the world and yet never get out of their vest pockets. Men like snails, men like eels, men like slugs and not as good. And nothing. Getting your last paycheck at a harbor, at a factory, at a hospital, at an aircraft plant, at a penny arcade, at a barbershop, at a job you didn't want anyway. Income tax, sickness, servility, broken arms, broken heads, all the stuffing come out like an old pillow. We have everything and we have nothing. Some do it well enough for a while and then give way. Fame gets them, or disgust, or age, or lack of proper diet, or ink across the eyes, or children in college, or new cars, or broken backs while skiing in Switzerland, or new politics, or new wives, or just natural change and decay. The man you knew yesterday hooking for 10 rounds, or drinking for 3 days and 3 nights by the Sawtooth Mountains. Now just something under a sheet or a cross or a stone or under an easy delusion or packing a Bible or a golf bag or a briefcase. How they go, all the ones you thought would never go. Days like this, like your day today. Maybe the rain on the window trying to get through to you. What do you see today? What is it? Where are you? The best days are sometimes the first, sometimes the middle, and even sometimes the last. The vacant lots are not bad. Churches in Europe on postcards are not bad. People in wax museums frozen into their best sterility are not bad. Horrible, but not bad. The cannon. Think of the cannon. And toast for breakfast and coffee hot enough so you know your tongue is still there. 3 geraniums outside a window, trying to be red and trying to be pink and trying to be geraniums. No wonder sometimes the women cry. No wonder the mules don't want to go up the hill. Are you in a hotel room in Detroit looking for a cigarette? One more good day. A little bit of it. And as the nurses come out of the building after their shift, having had enough, 8 nurses with different names and different places to go, walking across the lawn. Some of them want cocoa and a paper. Some of them want a hot bath. Some of them want a man. Some of them are hardly thinking at all. Enough and not enough. Arcs and pilgrims, oranges, gutters, ferns, antibodies, boxes of tissue paper. In the most decent sometimes sun, there's a soft smoke feeling from urns and the canned sound of old battle planes. And if you go inside and run your finger along the window ledge, you'll find dirt, maybe even earth. And if you look out the window, there will be the day. And as you get older, you'll keep looking, sucking your tongue in a little. No. Maybe. Some do it naturally, some obscenely, everywhere.
This number is dedicated the sweet Jerry Newman, my angel. Free Jerry Newman with all his sweetnesses. That. I'm leaving town. I'm so unhappy. Oh, baby Lester, I couldn't be less happy. You know that I'm playing music and singing all afternoon. So oh, why don't you play? Why don't you play for me? Don't hang around and drag me. I'm just like Billy. I want to hear the music. I'm like leaving town. Like that girl, what's her name? What's her fame? Sapo po do 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 do. Baby, sapo do 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 do. I'm sitting in the woods in North Carolina, dreaming of my ultimate dream lord. Oh baby, I'm leaving town. Don't hang round. Ain't gonna be back. I'm like Joe Williams. I'm gonna leave this town. Ain't never going to show around. Ain't gonna be back. Goodbye. Goodbye. I'm leaving this old town.
You're listening to Skid Row Studios.
I'm not doing it with you.
Please do it with me.
Fuck that.
Can you please have sex with me?
At Skid Row Studios?
At Skid Row Studios.
Maybe. Okay.
I'm Chris Cahill, host of Psychic Every Day on SkidRowStudios.com. I come to you live on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock Pacific Time with a show about being psychic and all things psychic. You can call in during the show to get a reading. The number is 1-800-893-9562. And that is at www.SkidRowStudios.com. You can also find Psychic Every Day as a free downloadable podcast on iTunes.
Hello, I'm Julianne Good, the host of Psych One-on-One, live on Mondays from 7 to 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Every week I talk with psychology experts as we explore the issues that matter to you. Anything from reducing anxiety to getting better Z's at night. Call in at 800-893-9562 to ask us questions and give us your opinions. We'd love you to join us. We're here to make psychology understandable and give you the information you need to make your life better. And if you can't listen live, our shows are also archived and available for downloading from iTunes, and we're at www.skidrowstudios.com. Join us, please.
As a kid, when I was about 15 or 16, I asked all those questions you're asking now. Mm. So I said to myself, how can you make a world of uniformity, bring all the nations together? Their social customs, their concept of God is different. They may have 10 wives, you believe in one. How do you bring them together? And I said the most difficult three words in my life, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I really didn't know. How can I do that? A global civilization? Until you understand what you're talking about. So I got confused. I don't think my own thinking is talking to yourself.
Yes.
If I say, I'll see you Saturday, you know, I take the kids in and he said, I can't see you. See, so it's talking to yourself. It's nothing magical. So I talked to myself and I said, how do you know your system works? It sounds good on paper. You sound like, it's my own language, a utopian. Mm-hmm. So I got a book from the library years ago, and it was called 125 Utopias and Why They Failed.
Yeah.
To me, that was very important to read. And I read that book, and I came up with something slightly different. I felt that I had in my day a thing called a Victrola. You wind it up and the record would play. And I was thinking within those terms, and my age, like 94, I've seen so many changes that I couldn't accept the notion of utopia. If I design a very good city, that's the best I know up to now. And I know that that new city would be a straitjacket to the kids of the future.
Yes.
They'll design their own cities. Mm-hmm. So if you made a statue of me in front of that city, you hold back the future. Mm-hmm. If you have a laptop, which I'm sure you may have, okay, a laptop, it's not the best that can be. It's the best we know of up to now.
Yeah.
10 years from now, the laptop will be smaller, lighter, faster, everything. Mm-hmm. You can't freeze anything, or you can't use the word utopia because it assumes you have done the ideal civilization. And to me, that's ridiculous. Anything I design can be surpassed.
Yeah, of course.
Even in the history of my own work, mm-hmm. I keep changing things.
Okay,
I have no fixed notion.
All the visions of the Venus Project I've seen, they look beautiful. They are stunningly well-designed worlds. But it seems like a lot of the people that I've spoken to, not yourself yet, I'm speaking to you now, they see a world without greed, without fear, without murder, without governments, without police forces, without investment bankers.
How do you retain that if there's such a thing as jealousy? Even a thing like that.
Or terrorism. Someone might want to blow up.
Sure. Yeah. I met many different people in my travels, and I try to explain what jealousy is. Mm-hmm. See, they don't define their terms. If you ask a particular person, what is your conclusion now in life that you're 70 years old? Because, well, I'm a nature lover. I believe in letting nature alone. I think nature is a wonderful thing. I say, you mean you like hurricanes, earthquakes, which kill thousands of people? That's nature too. Being ruthlessly honest, there are some aspects of nature that preserve life and some that are dangerous. A rattlesnake is natural, a cobra is natural, and an earthquake is natural. And meteors falling on the earth is natural.
Yeah.
So I'm not a nature acceptor. There's some aspects of nature I like, other aspects are detrimental to human beings.
Mm-hmm.
So I have, when I meet a person, say I'm a nature lover, I say, what do you mean by that? Another person says, I'm spiritual. I'm not sure what they mean. So I say, what do you mean by that? You mean you have no locks on your door? If you see a hungry person, you bring them into your house and feed them? Oh, no. I know that what they're talking about, they have no real clarification of the use of words. Mm-hmm. And then I begin to get confused because I want to know what the Earth person means when he says, I believe in social design, I'm a socialist. I say, or I meet another guy who says, I'm a communist. I said, how would you prevent corruption under communism? I don't know. I said, how will you house the millions of people that need housing? I don't know. Then just say, tell me more about what you believe in. They have no information. Then I meet a friend of mine, or an acquaintance, not really that close, and he told me he was running for political office. I said, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Well, yeah, you
he didn't get the message.
He didn't understand.
Of course he didn't get. He said, what do you mean by that? I said, as politicians, I've met many of them in Washington. Mm-hmm. And I said, how would you stop cars from hitting each other? I don't know. Mm-hmm. How would you increase the agricultural yield without exhausting the soil? Mm-hmm. I don't know. But what do you know about the physical world? I guess I'm not technical. Mm-hmm. I said, okay. You understand that everything we have today, your cameras, your car, your airplanes, your communications are all technical. Mm-hmm. And if a politician is not a technician, I don't know what they can do. I really don't know what they understand. I said, when you fly in a commercial airliner today, you don't have to call the pilot, say you've been flying at an angle. Straighten up. He knows the business. The navigator knows how to get to where you're going. Mm-hmm. And it's all done by some branch of technology. So, is technology the answer? No. It has more answers than non-technology.
Okay.
Become good. Be kind. What do you mean by that? So to me it means that everyone should have access to a relevant education. All people all over the world need clean air, clean water, arable land, and a relevant education. Relevant means no advertising, no lawyers, no businessmen, no investment bankers. People that have the ability to make food grow, take care of physical injury. Those are the real people. I don't know of any other kind of people, but there are people called philosophers, which sit back and meditate on their navel or go into a room and free their mind of all kinds of thought and come up with wonderful answers. What is needed in the world is peace and harmony. Mm-hmm. How do you attain that? I don't know. If you don't have a method of solving a problem, they say, I don't know what you're talking about, John. So I said, well, if I had anything to do with it, with the running of a nation, I would take down signs, drive carefully, slippery when wet. I put abrasive in the highway so it's not slippery when wet. There's other signs, school district, 14 miles an hour. The power output would be 14 miles an hour. So you can step on the gas all you want to. And it says, dangerous school children crossing. I designed a gadget that looks like this. And when a kid presses the button across the street, he can't go across until the red light goes on and the pavement turns up like that, like a cone. Mm-hmm. And so no car can hit a kid. That's how I say I care. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it means. I believe in peace and harmony and goodwill. Mm-hmm. I understand the language, but I know it has no backup.
Sure.
So the Venus Project differs from other projects in that when I said to myself, how are you going to change people? I said, I didn't know. So I joined the Ku Klux Klan. Did you know about that?
No, I didn't.
In Miami.
Did you?
And I dissolved it in a month and a half. There were 32 members, including the head guy. After that, I joined the White Citizens Council. Mm-hmm. They hate foreigners. So I joined by identification, so they identified with them. Mm-hmm. But I always worked on their leader. Mm-hmm. And I dissolved it in 1 month alone. And when I came back to New York from California, I asked a lot of people, well, who are the most backward people in the area?
Yeah.
They said the Arabs. They said they still believe the earth is flat.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to them, I said to myself, I'm going to see if I can dissolve that group. But before I did, I found out who the leader was. His name was Elbaz. I called him on the phone. I said, Elbaz, can I come and talk to you? I know his dialect. He said, you are Arab? That's the way he spoke. I said, eh, means yes in Arabic. I speak many little bits of language. Mm-hmm. German, French, a little bit. So what I did is I asked Elbaz if I can see him. He said, from where your father he born? I said, Lebanon. He says, come and saw me. He's come and see me. So he said to me, when I get to see him, alone, he said, you believe the world is round? I said, yes. In his country, that means that's ridiculous. Then he held his hand up like this, and he pointed to his head, telling exactly what he did. He said, if the world is round, man fall me down here. All the water, he fall me down from the world. Mm-hmm. So he said to me, you saw what I'm telling you? I said, yeah. So I gave him a balloon. I brought the balloon there, and I rubbed it with fur real fast. Mm-hmm. And I put some cornflakes in his hand, mm-hmm. and told him to hold his hand 10 inches away from the balloon. Do you know what happens with cornflakes if you rub it with fur?
I don't.
Electrostatically, they move up and adhere to the balloon. Called static electricity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So his jaw hit the pavement after the cornflakes went all over the balloon.
And didn't fall off.
He said, world, he magnet? I said, eh, ah. And he explained that to all the others.
So you showed them some
evidence. An hour and a half.
Yeah.
And I turned them around.
Okay, let's, because it's okay if I...
Turn people around with logic doesn't work at all.
Evidence is what they like.
Well, for him, what he considers evidence, not what I consider. Then I thought in the Bible it said, honor thy father and mother. My mother was a racist and a bigot. She hated foreigners, Japanese, blacks. And I brought a Japanese kid home one day. She said, I don't want that kind around. So I used reason, you know, as a dummy. I was a kid, I thought reason is a bridge. Didn't work at all.
No.
So I said, if you can't get to your mother, you can't change the world.
You want
to know how I changed the clan of my mother?
Sure.
Okay. I befriended a guy named Lou Merlin, who was head of the clan in Miami, that group. And he had a war surplus store. You know what that is? You don't understand?
Yeah, yeah, Army-Navy store, yeah.
Yeah, so I used to buy lenses. And he said, what do you do with the stuff you buy? I says, Lou, you're welcome to come to my lab and see what I do with it. And I did different optical devices. And he said, you smart guy. I said, what do you think of the clan? I said, it's a great organization, but it doesn't go far enough. See, if you attack, it doesn't work.
No.
He said, what do you mean, doesn't go far enough? I said, Lou, after he visited my lab, he respected me. And here's what he said. Will you come on down to the clan and talk to our boys about what you're doing? I said, Lou, they wouldn't listen to me, you know. He said, I didn't want to listen to you. You a smart guy. I says, Lou, if you can do that, that'd be fine. So he said, I want you to listen to his here jock. He knows what he's talking about. Because he was impressed by things I showed him. I can tell you what I showed him, too.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, if you want to know. Anyway, he said to me, after I talked to his guys a little while, I tried to talk to them about animal training. Because they're interested in dogs. They hunt a lot. So I showed him some films I did on a bunch of animals that I had trained that sit at a table. And I bring food there, and it's real, and they eat it. And I said, before I worked on animals, I worked on insects. I paint formic acid on a tin can, put an ant on the end, would follow the formic acid.
Forever.
I'd say, hey, well, I've been here before. He'd never walk off unless I painted the formic acid off the can. And then I know that in most insects respond to sounds, chemicals, light. Then I worked on animals. My greatest difficulty was snakes. In conditioning snakes, I didn't even know how to start. This is when I was a kid. So what I did is I put a rack of brown mice in with the snakes, and the snake would center its head and grab the mouse. You'd see the hind legs kicking.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering how he swallowed it. The teeth had back weight, and he moved up and back, shoving it down the throat.
Yeah.
He didn't swallow. Then I wanted him not to bother the White Mouse. So I put a White Mouse in there, and I put a glass partition between the White Mouse and the snake. And he'd center his head on the White Mouse and hit the glass. And after 10 or 15 times, when the White Mouse was anywhere within the area of the snake, it would make an attempt. So I pulled the glass out then, and the White Mouse can go anywhere in that cage, but the snake would only eat the Dark Mouse. And the next thing I did is photograph the White Mouse sitting on the snake's head, you know, all going like it.
Yeah.
And the snake would be moving around,
and
never bothered White
Mouse. You've conditioned the snake.
Yeah. Then I said, what about nature, like jealousy? Is that inborn? Is that an instinct? Or is it learned? So I talked to a psychologist about it. He says, no, it's a natural thing, jealousy. It's all over the world in every animal. I says, give me an example. He said, well, if I reach for my cat, the dog growls. Particularly if I put it on my lap and stroke it. So I said, is that what you mean by jealousy? He says, that's what I mean by jealousy. That's an operational definition. So I said, if it's instinctive, I'm going to try to find out. So I would feed the dog a little bit of fresh liver and then reach for the cat and keep feeding the dog fresh liver. And after 10 to 15 times, when I reach for the cat, the dog's tail would wag. So if it's inborn, that wouldn't happen.
Mm.
The dog would do well. So I had to reject that.
Mm-hmm.
So I began to talk to scientists, mostly psychologists in the old days. And I said, why do you adjust people to the system? It's insane.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do. They have to be stupid to do that. Because psychologists are brought up with a routine of behavior. And they are given statistics that are not always accurate. And so I began to do a lot of work myself. Now my grandfather changed me in certain ways. He said, Jock, people came from all over the world to America, and they brought the printing press, the Arabs brought algebra, that's the name of Arab algebra,
mm-hmm.
and the Arabs gave us mathematics and the zero, and different nations gave us the printing press and the language. We speak butchered English
mm-hmm.
in America.
Yeah.
So my grandfather said, if you love the earth, pledge allegiance to the earth and everyone on it. If you pledge allegiance to any one nation, you're negating all the other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that made sense to me. Now, my grandfather in other areas was not sane. He was insane. He believed there were people lived under the ground that looked like us, that were replicas, was chicken feet, you know, web foot. So there were certain areas of my grandfather's behavior that made sense.
Yeah.
So in school, I refused to pledge allegiance to the flag. Apparently, the teacher I had at that time didn't like that. She grabbed me by the ear, dragged me all the way down the hall to the principal's office. I was only about 14 then. And she said to the principal, he doesn't want a pledge allegiance to the flag. So the teacher looked at the principal, looked at the teacher and said, you're excused, he can go back now. And he put his arm on me. He says, why don't you want a pledge allegiance? Everybody does. I says, everybody wants to believe the earth was flat. It doesn't make it flat. Somebody said, what do you think of American history? I'm giving you the guts of what changed me.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, everybody in the history book says the right thing and does the right thing and doesn't sound like real people. They make mistakes, they have errors in judgment, and they don't have any of that in the history book. Everybody looks right. So he said, well, what do you think of the teaching we do in school? I said, when a teacher says to a child, that's wrong, there's no information in that language for a child to work with. Well, that's not what I told you. There's no information in that.
Mm.
So I said, what is information? I said, if a child spells cat with a K, say you're very close, draw the two letters that are close and change the K to a C. But don't say that's wrong because it has no... He says, I'm going to have to call your mother in. So I says, I'll do what you have to do. So my mother comes in crying, the usual, you know, what did he do? She's going like that. And he says, he didn't do anything. Well, we really have no place for him in our schools. So I said, oh my God, what's going to happen to him? He says, I don't think you have to worry about that because I'm going to take him to the bookstore and buy him whatever books he wants to read. and let him read what he wants to read in school. I'll rope off the area. But I want him to come to me once a week and tell me what he's reading and why he's reading that. So I'll have to tell you a little bit about the other bits before I continue.
Sure.
Can I?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Okay.
We've got plenty of time.
Well, I wanted to know how airplanes fly as a kid on this thin substance. I could not understand it. So I asked my mother and father and my relatives. They had no information. So I finally went to the library and got out a book called The Wright Brothers. And I was very anxious because for years I wanted to know. I opened that book with great anxiety. And it starts out, it was a sunny day in May, and Mrs. Orville Wright was hanging clothing on the line. I didn't want to know that. That bothered me. And I had to go through the whole book was sunny day in May. And near the end of the book, they killed a pigeon. And they put wiring in his wings to keep him out there. And they moved the wings up and back to find the center of gravity and launch it. And that was information. And when I went back to school and I looked at the books, most of them were sunny day in May. A lot of bullshit and little information. Mm. So I began to read and scratch the bullshit for sunny day in May and look for substance. So I was able to read both more substance than sunny day in May. Then he died in about a year and a half after he set that up and he took away that privilege. So I played hooky. I didn't go to school for 6 weeks. One day I came home and the truant officer was sitting on my doorstep. He said, "You got Prescott? You haven't been to school for a month." I said, "6 weeks." "That's right." He said, "What do you do when you're not in school?" Because I go to the library and I read what I want to read. I go to the Museum of Science and Industry and look at what I want to look at. He says, "You hang out in gangs, you use drugs." I said, "No, I'm not interested in that." He said, "Jesse, what do you do at home?" I said, "I have a little lab. It's not very elaborate." He said, "Can I see it?" I said, "It's under a condition that you don't tell my mother that you are." He said, "I agree." I showed him my lab. Then he said, "I can't say you're wrong and not doing anything bad." He says, "You can do me a favor if you want to." What kind of thing? He says, "Show up Monday just to say that I did my job." Well, I loved it. I began to hitchhike toward California. Why? Because their friend dropped him. They said, "Come to California. There's lots of jobs." And I couldn't get a job. My father couldn't get a job. This was really depressing. The banks failed. They paid off a new home. Not if they didn't pay it off. They made down payments with several payments. When the banks failed, they couldn't continue to pay them. 15 million people in my area sleeping in every empty lot. That was the beginning of social housing. I looked at store windows, there were phonographs, you know, maybe yonder, there were all kinds of things available, but they didn't have money. They were good people. They made shacks. And at the same time, I read there was going to be a bonus march on Washington by the veterans of World War I. That was years after the war. The government promised soldiers $600, but they didn't have the money at the time to give these millions of guys $600. So they marched on Washington with their uniforms, medals, crutches, wheelchairs, and they were sleeping in every empty lot around the Capitol. Well, I was a kid in Washington watching that, and General Douglas MacArthur, I don't know if you ever heard of him, he was a captain then. He said, the Senate said, "Get those guys out of here, it doesn't look good." So he ordered them to leave, and they said, "Not until we get our bonus." So he had his troops throw tear gas at them, and that bothered me, no end.
Well, they were tear-gassing soldiers.
Yes, tear-gassing veterans.
Yeah, because
they wanted their bonus that the government promised them.
Yeah.
And then I said to myself, this shit's got to go. It would look very bad to me.
Yeah.
Because there was stuff around. Farmers grew food, but people didn't have the money to buy it, so their crops were rotting away. Now, I noticed at that time it was a depression. Now, you'll have to take my word for it because you weren't around then. There were people up on soapboxes with an American flag and a Nazi flag talking about the Nazi point of view.
Yeah.
It was socialist, communist, Mankind United, all kinds of people talking of new ideas. It was the depression that stimulated that.
Yeah.
Where they lost confidence in their elected leaders.
It's kind of like we have now.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I was standing in front of a communist speaking, and he said, "Beat it, Sonny." Because I was just 16 or so. We were all adults. No kid partners. So I was standing there, and he said, "I told you to beat it." I says, "I want to hear what you've got to say." He said, "Why?" Because I don't believe what the Democrats say about the Republicans or what the Republicans say about Democrats. I want to hear from a communist what communism is. He says, "You can stay." So an hour later, he said to me, I said to him rather, "I want to ask you 1,000 questions." He says, "You have to go to the YCL. I said, "What's that?" He's a young communist league. I said, "Where are they?" He gave me an address. And I went there, and there were kids, boys and girls, 10 years to 17.
I'll make all your dreams come to life, and slay them as quickly as they came. Smother another failure, lay this to rest, that's all yourself.
What does it symbolize? Pallid incompetence hanging on a tree. I question all things as I stand before the festering and varnished facades of your haughtiest moral dogmas. I write thereon in letters of blazing scorn. Lo and behold, all this is fraud. Gather around me, O ye death-defiant, and the earth itself shall be thine to have and to hold. Too long the dead hand has been permitted to sterilize living thought. Too long right and wrong, good and evil, have been inverted by false prophets. No creed must be accepted upon authority of a divine nature. Religions must be put to the question. No moral dogma must be taken for granted. No standard of measurement deified. There is nothing inherently sacred about moral codes. Like the wooden idols of long ago, they are the work of human hands. And what man has made, man can destroy. He that is slow to believe anything and everything is of great understanding. For belief in one false principle is the beginning of all unwisdom. The chief duty of every new age is to upraise new men to determine its liberties, to lead it towards material success, to rend the rusty padlocks and chains of dead customs that always prevent healthy expansion. Theories and ideas that may have meant life and hope and freedom for our ancestors may now mean destruction, slavery, and dishonor to us. As environments change, no human ideal standeth sure. Whenever, therefore, a lie has built unto itself a throne, let it be assailed without pity and without regret, for under the domination of an inconvenient falsehood, no one can prosper. Let established sophisms be dethroned, rooted out, burnt and destroyed, for they are a standing menace to all true nobility of thought and action. Whatever alleged truth is proven by results to be but an empty fiction, let it be unceremoniously flung into the outer darkness, among the dead gods, dead empires, dead philosophies, and other useless lumber and wreckage. The most dangerous of all enthroned lies is the holy, the sanctified, the privileged lie, the lie everyone believes to be a modern truth. It is the fruitful mother of all other popular errors and delusions. It is a hydra-headed tree of unreason with a thousand roots. It is a social cancer. The lie that is known to be a lie is half eradicated. The lie that even intelligent persons accept as fact. The lie that has been inculcated in a little child around its mother's knee is more dangerous to contend against than a creeping pestilence. Popular lies have ever been the most potent enemies of personal liberty. There is only one way to deal with them. Cut them out to the very core, just as cancers are. Exterminate them root and branch. Annihilate them, or they will us.
We're all wired into a survival trip now. No more of the speed that fueled the 60s. Uppers are going out of style. This was the fatal flaw in Tim Leary's trip. He crashed around America selling consciousness expansion without ever giving a thought to the grim meat hook realities that were lying in wait for all the people who took him seriously. After West Point and the priesthood, LSD must have seemed entirely logical to him. But there's not much satisfaction in knowing that he blew it very badly for himself because he took so many others down with him. Not that they didn't deserve it. No doubt they all got what was coming to them. All those pathetically eager acid freaks who thought they could buy peace and understanding for $3 a hit. But their loss and failure is ours, too. What Leary took down with him was the central illusion of a whole lifestyle that he helped to create. A generation of permanent cripples, failed seekers, who never understood the essential old mystic fallacy of the acid culture. The desperate assumption that somebody, or at least some force, is tending that light at the end of the tunnel. this terrible gibberish. Grim memories and bad flashbacks looming up through the time fog of Stanyan Street. No solace for refugees, no point in looking back. The question is, as always, now.
A little bit of this town goes a very long way. After 5 days in Vegas, you feel like you've been here for 5 years. Some people say they like it, but then some people like Nixon, too. He would have made a perfect mayor for this town, with John Mitchell as sheriff and Agnew as master of sewers.
And abused every rule Vegas lived by. Burning the locals, abusing the tourists, terrifying the help. The only hope now, I felt, was the possibility that we'd gone to such excess that nobody in a position to bring the hammer down on us could possibly believe it. I tried to put the top up for privacy, but something was wrong with the motor. Nothing worked. When I hit the air conditioner button, I heard a nasty explosion under the hood. The top was jammed about halfway up, but I decided to try for the airport.
Holy God! How'd this happen?
No, they beat the shit out of me.
What the?
This is a terrible goddamn town for driving around in convertibles. But don't worry, I'm insured against all damages for only $2 a day.
I checked all my luggage through the chute.
All but the leather satchel, which was full of drugs. Very obvious. Amphetamine psychosis?
Paranoid dementia? Wave of ugly vibrations.
My head was so burned out that I wouldn't have cared if I had to climb aboard stark naked and covered by oozing.
So far, I think that I was beginning to feel nicely adjusted to the idea of permanent hysteria.
I felt the slightest misunderstanding with the stewardess would cause me to either cry or go mad.
And the woman seemed to sense this.
Would you like some more cubes for your Bloody Mary?
She only seemed nervous when I pulled a grapefruit out of my satchel and began slicing it with a hunting knife.
I never go anywhere without grapefruit. It's hard to get a really good one, unless you're rich.
I wonder if she's already decided to have me taken off the plane in a cage when we arrive. I needed something for my nerves, so I reached for the amyls in my bag.
Oh, no. I can't sell those things except by prescription.
I know, but you see, I'm a doctor. I don't need a prescription.
I had to ask. We get all kinds of real freaks in this place.
Don't worry. I understand perfectly. But I have a bad heart.
Certainly, I'll get them right away.
Just be thankful your heart is young and strong. If I were you, I would never...
Holy shit. What? Yes, you'll have to excuse me now. I feel it coming on.
I took another big hit off the amyl and my heart was full of joy. I felt like a monster reincarnation of Horatio Alger.
A man on the moon.
And just sick enough to be totally confident.
I want you to remember one thing. There will be no year 2000. Not as we know it.